Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Touch Arcade podcast. This is episode number 10. I'm Eli, and tonight we have Arnold.
Hey.
Blake.
Hey.
And Igor from Lima Sky, the maker of Doodle Jump.
Hey, good to have you guys here, and good to be talking to you guys.
Yeah. So, Igor, I've seen you guys have had just insane success over the holiday season. You want to tell us a little bit about how Lima Sky started? And, where you guys came from, I guess.
Okay. Well, Lima Sky is basically my brother and myself. My brother Marco, who is currently in Croatia, and it's 4 o'clock in the morning there, so he couldn't join us. But he's responsible for all the programming while I do the graphics. And basically, we decided that it would be fun to try and develop some iPhone games and apps. And that's where we are now.
So what were your backgrounds?
All kinds of different things. I mean, my brother actually did a lot of mobile game development in a company that he used to work in. And I got my degree in marketing and management and got my master's at design and technology. And been doing a lot of websites and, sort of the usual online things up to now. And he's sort of done the similar thing just in Croatia while I was here in New York.
So you're in New York, he's in Croatia, and you guys just work together remotely?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, he's actually, now that we're sort of both doing this full time, not sort of, really, we are. All you need is a laptop so you can be anywhere you want. And my brother's big passion after, iPhone gaming is Japanese and Japan. So he spent some time in Japan in the spring. So basically, it doesn't matter where we are. As long as there's an internet connection, we can, get the work done. I got to say, it is easier when we're sort of in the same room. Which, he was in New York for a while as well, so we worked together, but it doesn't matter,
Yeah. So I guess before we get too far into it, we should mention that I think it's just obvious now that you all created Doodle Jump, which I expect most people listening to the podcast will have played and have and own, but just in case, Doodle Jump is a very popular iPhone game that... looks like when did it come out? It was like in early 2000.
End of March.
So March 2009.
Yeah.
And it's a tilt-based game where your little doodle character is jumping from platform to platform, and there's a few different types of platforms, and basically the goal is to get as high as you can. And I mean, it's been updated, a ton of times since the initial release with lots of little add-ons and whatnot. Though I think I still prefer the classic, maybe just from a I don't know if you can already say from a nostalgia standpoint because it's only been like 12 months, but I really like the simplicity of the original, but it's done massively well. I mean, it was shot into the top, what was a peak rank?
Well, we never actually made it to number one in the United States yet.
Okay.
So we were number two in the States, number one game though. And then we made it to number one in quite a few of the other countries, including UK, Australia, Germany,
that's
Sweden.
Actually surprising considering how, so Doodle Jump's one of the games that's had a lot of longevity on the top 100 list. Go on.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, just in that there's, a lot of games shoot into the top 10 or so for a short period of time and then sort of fall away to obscurity. But there's, a small collection of games or apps that manage to be, just have managed to sustain. Doodle Jump, from what I recall, has basically been in the top 100, usually in the top 15 to 20 at least, ever since it really gained popularity early on. Is that true?
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, it's funny because, like you said, we've actually had a really slow start. Mm-hmm. And we've only reached our peak just before Christmas. So this is, 6 months into the game cycle. Mm-hmm. So, and we've had ups and downs, and... but recently managed to stay in the top 25 since the summer. So the way I've calculated it, we've kind of had like three peaks. And then the last one was the highest one that, you know, we reached number two in the States. And, you know, we actually just got off of number one in the UK. And the UK took forever to actually crack it, which was sort of surprising, you know, and then it held on really long on the number one there. So a little different than some other games, I guess, because, I mean, we've had the same thing happen to us as most of the other games went early on when we got featured by Apple in April. And then Gizmodo wrote about us, and you guys, you know, were actually one of the first ones to write about us as well. Mm-hmm. And that's when we shot up to number six, I think, in the States.
The initial popularity. Push.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in April. And that was only the U.S. All the other countries were sort of very lukewarm. Nothing was happening there. And then we, you know, started our slide down, sort of the usual, you know, app or game trajectory. Mm-hmm. But then we managed, you know, and I think we still stayed in the top 100. And then, you know, we did a couple of, we did some cross promotions, which, mm-hmm. you know, we can talk about later. And we did a couple of other things and managed to get back up in the top 25 at the, sort of in August and stayed there ever since. So,
yeah, it's funny talking about, you know, I mean, you know, we say things like, oh, it's been there forever. Yeah, I mean, you know, the iPhone, the App Store is such a accelerated process. Like 3 months or 6 months seems like forever in the App Store time.
So, it does.
Yeah. And then in the last few months, it's really just sort of hit that critical mass. I mean, you got a TV, there's a sitcom mention, an NBC sitcom that
It was CBS. It was
CBS.
The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny that, like, we were not approached or told about it. We just actually learned about it through Twitter. You know, a bunch of our fans started tweeting, hey, Little Jeff was mentioned on TV. I'm really. So that was pretty exciting.
Yeah. And I think it's just a reflection of sort of its, you know, pervasiveness. You know, I think people with iPhone, you know, I think it's one of the iPhone classic games now where, you know, everyone, you know, quote unquote, everyone knows about it. And, you know, obviously the popularity really surged around Christmas with all the presumably new iPod Touch owners and iPhone owners picking up, you know, games and whatnot. Eli, did you have anything?
Well, I was just kind of curious about how all the cross-promotion stuff you guys have done, because I don't know if you guys – it seems like you were one of the first that I really noticed was doing a lot of cross-promotion, like everything from, you know, the Pocket God stuff, which then culminated to the little feature advertisement thing you guys did on Gizmodo and everything else that featured either, you know, a doodle jump in someone else's game or something in your game or something like that. How you felt that all worked out?
Well, someone challenges us, I think we were the first ones with Pocket God to actually do the cross promotion with one of the pygmies from Pocket God in Doodle Jump. Basically, approached Dave out of cold and said, "Hey, you know, can we get one of your characters in our game?" And you know, they were really nice and open about it, and it worked out really well. And then, you know, as everyone knows, you know, every couple of other games followed, and there's been quite a few cross promotions now, to the point where, you know, not daily, but we get emails quite often. Hey, can we put Doodle Jump character in our game? And, you know, even from people who haven't done a game yet. So it's pretty funny. But it was basically, you know, it was the time when it wasn't enough to just be on the App Store to actually make it be noticed like it was possible at the beginning of the App Store in July 2008. So we needed to find a way to actually promote our game, and with something that costs 99 cents and with advertising that costs so much, it was really hard to actually pay for advertising to actually make any kind of return on it. So, you know, we started thinking creatively, and we're thinking, well, Pocket God is really popular, and I think it would be fun to have an Easter egg, you know, which is a very popular gaming sort of device, and it worked out. So,
yeah,
it's very rare.
Now I remember, so we were one of the first people to write about Doodle Jump. I remember running across it because I was going through a pile of games that like I had downloaded to test out, and Doodle Jump stood out definitely. You have a lot of games, actually a lot of apps in the App Store. Where was Doodle Jump in terms of your, like, was it your, you know, third game, your eighth game, you know, had you seen not a lot of success prior to the game, or?
Well, you know, success I think is relative. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, you can call something a success if it sells, you know, 50 copies a day, 100 copies a day, you know, 300 or, you know, 10,000. So we've had quite a few of the games and apps that they're doing well. I would call them successful. Mm-hmm. Doodle Jump, of course, is the most successful one by all means. And it was one of the latest ones we did, primarily because after we've put it out and after it gained traction, we've basically focused all of our time to actually update it and keep it alive. Right. So that's sort of where, in the order of, you know, everything else, it fits. We have put out a couple of small ones since Doodle Jump was, you know, came out, but nothing really that's, you know, sort of a, you know, the next game by Lima Sky or whatever, mm-hmm. call it. So.
And so what are your plans, I guess, from now?
Well, we are planning to continue keeping Doodle Jump alive as long as, you know, there's interest with new updates and things that we think will make the game even more appealing to people. And we also have some plans for a sequel and a couple of other sort of ideas that we're cooking, but we'll see. It's sort of, you know, like you guys were saying earlier, 3 months in the App Store is a sort of a very, very long time. And, you know, I don't know what's going to be in 3 months.
So how do you feel about, it seems like ever since Doodle Jump started getting popular, we're seeing all these other games that are, you know, Doodle whatever. You know, like there's a Doodle, like if you just search the App Store for Doodle, there's a million different things, you know, Doodle Search, Tic Tac Doodle, Doodle Kids. They all have kind of shared the same art style, where Doodle Jump was obviously first. I mean, are you glad that you've spawned this genre of, you know, Doodle blank games?
Well, I mean, I'm glad that, you know, people like it and that they're trying to emulate it, which I guess, you know, is a flattery. I just hope that it doesn't get overdone so much that people start hating the, you know, the whole genre and the look. And that's very possible, especially if a lot of the other ones are done in a sort of the Doodle style that's not as crafted. So we'll see. I guess we'll see how it goes.
Who did the artwork for the for Doodle Jump?
It was mostly me. Through a combination of another artist who did some of the monster drawings. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, basically that's how we have it split between my brother and me. I do the graphics and he does the programming, and that's how most of our games are done. And then, you know, we work with some outside either artists or illustrators or something for some specific things that I cannot draw myself.
So. Now, can you tell me how the difficulty of Doodle Jump scales up? Because I've actually been trying to figure this out, because it seems like my peak for the longest time was about 30,000. And I was actually just at a restaurant with my girlfriend on Saturday night playing the game, warming up for the podcast, I guess, and I managed to break 40,000. It was like the most momentous occasion of the week, sitting restaurant, you know, like trying not to like make an ass of myself. But
did you scream out?
It seems like, well, I know, kind of, yeah, but it seems like there's significant difficulty jumps between like the 18,000 mark and above. Like I notice I have a ton of deaths at like between 17,000 and 18,000. Is that just chance, or is that like how your randomization algorithm works? Is there certain steps as you go up, or can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, it's actually what you were saying is chance, but there are sort of three different stages. Right now, there's sort of the easy stage that goes up to 5,000, where you don't really have any obstacles, like, you know, the monsters or anything like that. You do get an occasional propeller hit or, you know, maybe a jetpack. And then from 5,000 to 15,000, you basically have what we call the sort of the easy levels, or, you know, the easy range, where you have some of the monsters, but they're really, you know, easy to sort of get by. And then about the 15,000 is where things get hairy, where you have all kinds of different things. So, you know, initially people were not making it up so high. So, you know, we thought that like the three stages would be enough, but now we're seeing more of a sort of need to expand the range over higher, because it basically, you know, once you reach that high, there are different sort of predefined scenarios that you can run into that make the game interesting, but it doesn't necessarily get progressively more difficult. It really becomes a game of endurance, which in its basic concept, Doodle Jump really is of the game of focus and endurance. So now, you know,
what are your plans for like the making it more difficult on the top end? Because I noticed, I mean, looking at the high scoreboards, there's people that are scoring like millions of points, and I don't even know how that's possible. I mean, I'm so terrible at the game, I guess, in comparison.
Well, you know what? We were calculating the average scores, and the average score is about 8,000. So, while it makes sort of a natural thing to think that you would have to make the game more difficult at the higher levels, it may not necessarily be the case, because, like I said, it's really about the focus and just jumping up and enduring as high as possible without falling. Because it comes to a certain point where you make it so difficult with the obstacles that it just can't progress anymore. So it's not, you know, it just makes the game stop.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Something we should probably ask, because I'm sure a bunch of people are wondering, is the first version of Doodle Jump, how long did that take you guys to you know, go from concept to actually submitting it on the App Store?
Probably about 2 months, I would say.
2 months?
Huh. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, Blake, Arne, you guys have anything else?
Not really. It's definitely you know, one of the few games that I do go back to, you know, at least once in a week for fun, which as we've said before, is not something
a luxury that we
really don't. It's a very small set of games, and yeah, you can always play that one more game of Doodle Jump.
It's true. Like I don't really get into high scoring games. Like, it's never been something I've been into, but there's something about Doodle Jump that looks like I get so worked up playing the stupid game that like everyone I know makes fun of me. Because I'll like be doing the thing where like, you know, when you watch kids play video games and they're like making their dude jump and they're like leaning, like physically leaning to like make them jump farther. I do the same thing when I'm getting up to like the 25,000s in Doodle Jump, and everyone I know makes fun of me.
I've noticed that, you know, we've talked, I think, in a previous podcast, Arnold and I, at any rate, have, I think, mentioned, you know, games that have that feel where, you know, you feel like, you know, this time, you know, you just might be able to, you know, rank incredibly high, you know. So it's always like every game feels like, you know, you might be on the just a few steps away from, you know, grandeur. But like definitely I've noticed that, you know, once I hit about, well, I don't know, what's the mark? I mean, once I get past like, you know, 13,000 or something, you definitely get the pulse and the breathing starts to kick in. And by the time, if ever you get to like, you know, 20, 25, it's like you're almost, you know, it's like you someone gave you an adrenaline shot, you know, and you're like, all right. And I think that actually causes me to goof up, you know, because I get so keyed up on it.
I kind of think it does that same thing to me, too, because, yeah. You know, whenever I get near my top score, I'm like, oh, God, don't screw up. I'm so close.
I know. Yeah, I know. I should take like a sedative and then play it. And I'd probably just, you know, rock the high scoreboard.
Well, yeah. What's funny is, so actually, you know, the high score, so it's probably worth mentioning, the high score system in Doodle Jump was actually, it was really interesting the way it was done. The, you know, with the hash marks on the side of the screen as you pass people's high scores. And other games may have done that since, but that, I remember it being unique to Doodle Jump at the time. But I thought that was a really nice touch. And it sort of added that, you know, as you see, like, it adds to that, you know, stress, I guess, as you're getting to a high score and you see you're passing like these people, and then so you know you're almost, you're getting there.
Yeah, that was another first for Doodle Jump, and I don't think anyone has done that before us in the App Store. Mm-hmm. Even I haven't seen it anywhere else. But we're thinking, you know, you always have the high score somewhere outside of the game, and you know, why not put it right in the game, especially when you have something that can accommodate it. So I think that sort of helped us differentiate from you know, a bunch of other games, and got the attention of both the Apple and some of the review sites as well. And it was fun, you know, seeing all the names. And initially, it was when there weren't that many people playing, you could almost see everyone, you know, where everyone was. But now, of course, it's a little different. But that was really fun working on that sort of the high score system.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Great.
And so, actually, going back to, you know, the whole, I feel like I'm so close to breaking my score, and then you mess it up. We've actually gotten requests from some people to have a way to turn off the score, so because they get distracted by looking at where they are, and then it's like, oh my god, I'm so close, and then you fall, you know, like 100
right.
points below your
high score. I could see that.
You should have you should go the other way and like have like a running countdown of how far you are from your personal best.
right. Well, that will make it even worse.
Yeah, no, like
yeah, probably.
Like you know. And I guess in feet or score, you can just have a countdown right next to your doodler.
Right.
Pressure's on.
And like a big flashing, don't mess up now. Yeah. Don't mess up now.
Right. Some booming voice should come out. Right. Don't mess up.
Yeah. Like, alert. I think you're going to do it. You're going to do it this time. You're like, oh, my God. It's when the vibration kicks in. Yeah. Yeah. All
right. Well, Igor, thanks for joining us and talking about Doodle Jump as well as Lima Sky. I'm sure everyone will be looking forward to, you know, of course, future updates. Sequels would be very interesting, and or other major follow-ups that you have planned.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And so the next thing that we're going to discuss, and we actually had Igor play some games as we all played to talk about this week, that are actually available in the App Store. So let's go down that list. And first on the list is, which one do you want to talk about first, Eli?
I guess we can do Rebounce first.
Sure.
Do you want to? Rebounce kick that off? Is it's one of those games where you are. Well, first of all, you have this coin on the screen, or I don't know what they call it, a puck or a coin or something. It looks like a coin. You flip it around with your finger to constantly keep it airborne and bouncing off the spheres that are below you. And the spheres start green, and then they turn a greenish kind of striped orange, and then they go orange. And when they go orange, you hit them again, and they get cleared off the board. And there's also additional sphere types that you can't.
So they kind of compared it to Peggle.
Yeah, a little bit like Peggle.
Physics-y, trajectory-ish, bouncing ball game, I guess.
Yeah, it's one of those games where you get like huge chain reactions that you may or may not have intended on, you know, accomplishing, and then you feel really good when the entire screen just like clears itself.
Yeah, and if you see the video, it does. It's very it reminds you of Peggle.
Just yeah, it did. I definitely felt the Peggle piece. You know, yeah. The Peggle connection in there definitely.
Because you're shooting this thing and bouncing off of things, and
you got to kind of. You really have to sort of. I mean, you don't have a lot of time, but you've got to kind of calculate the physics of what you're doing, and you know, at least in the early part of the game, it took me a little while to kind of get a feel for the you know, the pullback and release setup they've got here.
Yeah, unlike Peggle, though, it's more of a real time game in that you are flinging this, I guess, coin, is it?
It's like a ring or something. Yeah. I think it's a puck with a hole in it.
Okay.
Made of gold.
Oh, they called a puck in the description.
Yeah, so you're flinging this puck around sort of in real time with your finger on the screen. So it's a little more, it's not like, you know, stop, pull back, shoot, like many of the physics games where you like set an arc and let it go and then your hand's off until like every movement stops. This is actually a little more involved.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with Igor. What'd you think of the game?
I think it's fun. I mean, it's sort of like you said. It has that nice feel of it's constant movement, and you know, it's you don't wait and shoot and wait and shoot. You do it constantly. Love the chain reactions. You know, it did occupy me for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Eli,
you know, I wanted to like this game because I really enjoy any game that, you know, has lots of chain reactions that, you know, I may or may not really have anything to do with. Like a bunch of those old Neo Geo puzzle games I really liked because of that like same reason. But I wasn't really crazy about the real time, you know, moving things around. Mm-hmm. Like these kind of games, I like to plan more ahead of... you know, the amount of time you have before the puck falls off the bottom of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what kind of killed the game for me. But I still, I don't know, I'm kind of up in the air about it. Like, I played it an awful lot, and I had a good time playing it, but I don't know if it would necessarily be a game that I would recommend.
Yeah, Blake, you're a physics gamer.
Yes, I am. I liked it, actually. I'm a huge Peggle fan, and... you know, while Peggle, you know, you can really sit there and, as we've said, you know, kind of really precisely lay that shot down. Here, I think in a way, because I like Peggle and because it's like that, you know, this has that feel, but it does force you to be real time. And in certain configurations of the board, like it was kind of I like the feeling of urgency as, you know, okay, this puck is flying, you know, especially there's certain layouts where there are indestructible, basically indestructible pieces. And, you know, once you get beyond a certain angle, you're not going to be able to fire down into a corridor, you know, and you're not going to be able to wipe out this section. I also like the fact that, one of the ways to, you know, complete a level is to, you know, you have this one final, you know, I guess object that you hopefully you eliminate everything else on the screen, but then you can tap this and it'll end the level. You know, I had situations where I'd wipe out things and that piece would fall, but yet my puck would be moving, and if I didn't react quick enough, it would actually collide with it before I wanted it to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just had this urgency, you know, basically Peggle real time, as we've said. And I liked it. I thought it was a you know, enjoyable, and it just added a different dimension. I think I probably like Peggle better, you know, overall.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like this for what it is. I thought it was kind of interesting, and it felt different, you know. It felt kind of unique.
Yeah,
so I
liked the game. I actually liked it. I liked it more than I thought I would in some ways. Eli, I understand exactly what you're saying about the real-time nature of it, in that I think we didn't like Flick Kitty for a very similar reason.
Right.
And Creepy Town and all the sort of deflection games that you had to do in real time. But I actually, you know, understanding that I didn't like those games that much, I actually liked this one. Just because the control is a little more direct than in either Flick Kitty or the Creepy Town, you know, reflection sort of breakout games where you have to draw a line of deflection. Because both of those games, the actual action was like you would do something just to like and it was a little bit roundabout. This one, I felt like I had a little more direct control of the puck. If that,
yeah, no, that makes sense. I don't know. That was just it's just a personal thing where I wish I had more time to like really line up like the crazy chains of things to clear off the board. And it felt like a lot of times I was screwing up my chains just on accident, just trying to keep the puck airborne.
Yeah, and I think I kind of think that's part of the game in that it's a little more of a frantic version of Peg. You know, like you're like trying to adjust in real time rather than plan these perfect shots out. And the other thing is I could really see people who like these type of games and aren't put off by that real-time nature of it would actually really, because it's well done in that respect, and it feels nice. My only real complaint about the game is it's got a weird level progression. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah, that was my problem with it too. Like, no, really.
Well, because they have like three different types of levels. I don't remember exactly. Like, there's a puzzle type. There's a I have to actually look.
There's like there's a bunch of levels, and there's also puzzle levels, and I don't know, it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
No, that's the thing. So it was hard. So there was rush, puzzle, bonus. Those are three types of levels that play a little differently.
Was it the intermixing of it that kind of threw you off?
Yeah, you couldn't sit down and play. You can't sit down and play through all puzzle levels, for example. You actually have to go through this, I guess, their version of a campaign where you're like playing a few puzzle levels, a few rush levels, a few bonus levels, and then only when you play each of those do they unlock the remainder of each of them. So you're sort of forced to play every type, which is, there's some variety, I guess, when you play it, but it's not typical, and it's confusing initially. I don't know, but also I kind of wanted to sit down and play one type for a while. And I mean, Igor, you were saying that you agreed that you didn't.
Yeah, the level progression was a little weird for me. Also, I just didn't really know what was going on. You know, you kept playing, and there was a game over, but you were able to continue play some more, and then you it was unlocking five different things initially. Yeah. Once you passed one of the levels, but then I looked back and I saw how they have it divided, and it kind of made sense. It does need improvement.
Yeah, and I would say the level progression thing would, first of all, it's confusing, and then it's also a little, I'd prefer to be able to pick which type of games I wanted to play.
Because I think you can do that later.
Yeah, it seems like a simple fix, so to speak, mm-hmm. Because I actually didn't like one of the types that much. I didn't like the ones that seemed to drag on forever.
Right, the point one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was the one that I didn't like either, because I couldn't really see the end in sight, and it just kind of got tedious.
Yeah, your goals were sort of cloudy. Like, you didn't really know what you're shooting for. You know, you're just kind of playing as long until they told you you passed it, but it took a long time. And So level select was a big issue for me that would prevented me to say that it's like, I just think they should improve that. But the gameplay itself, I thought, was fun enough, and I actually thought people who like these type of games would actually really like it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, for a buck.
Yeah, well,
give it a shot.
All right. So let's move on. The next game will be, let's go with Sword and Poker. And I can talk about this game, because I actually got kind of sucked into it, but I didn't actually get that far in the game in terms of like levels. But though I kind of see how it's progressing, so I actually really like it. So Sword and Poker, it's a
it's like a card/RPG kind of. It's hard.
Yeah,
to
the RPGs. I mean, the RPG section of it is kind of light, I would say, in that again, I'm probably like four boards in or five boards in. I'm actually on the fifth board, where like you're given a rudimentary path, and you have to which is a floor or a level, and you have to like kill the monsters on that floor to get to the next level. And there's like early levels, there's like two or three or four monsters, and when you go fight a monster, you get thrown into this basically a poker battle, where there's a grid of playing cards, and you you get dealt four cards and you have to place two of them to make a five-handed poker hand, and based on how many how good a hand you could make, it inflicts a certain amount of damage on the monster, and then you take turns vice versa, and everyone has a hit point counter. I mean, it reminded me in some ways, of course, of Puzzle Quest, except poker instead of match three, and of course the RPG side of it is much simpler on this game. Though as you go on, you can earn or you can buy better weapons, which affect how many hit points of damage each hand inflicts, and depending on what you value or what you feel like you can get, certain weapons seem to give you a lot of hit damage for like the three of a kind, straights, which are a little more common than obviously flushes, full houses, and whatnot. And there were other elements to the game too, which were interesting. Enemies had certain special skills, I think, that you could also earn in subsequent weapons, like paralysis, which would cause your turn to get skipped and whatnot. But I actually really got sort of sucked into it playing. And, I like playing poker. The problem with playing poker, traditional poker or hold'em or anything on the phone, is if it's not gambling, there's not anything actually up for monetary value or anything of value at risk when you're playing poker, it kind of loses a lot of its draw. So this sort of adds in, the gameplay element of like defeating your enemy to like actually put value back into the game. Eli?
Yeah, no, I thought this game was great. I mean, the different strategy that goes into the game itself actually really sucked me in way more than I thought it was going to, because I saw this on our forums and, paging through the screenshots, I was like, oh, this looks kind of cool, I'll throw it on the podcast list. And after I played it, it's extraordinarily deep with all the different stuff you can do. And it seems like you kind of have to, like, hedge your bets with what you want to play, because, like, you might have a really good hand to start, but if the computer plays something somewhere else, it's going to mess up your future hand. And, you kind of got to figure out how you want to play the cards that you have. And then there's this thing at the end when the entire grid is full that you can do diagonal matches as well as up and down and side to side, which just made the battles get crazy at the end, because if you could pull off a big hand on one of the diagonal ones that also matched the up and down and cross, you could do a huge amount of damage in one attack, which I found myself like saving cards to do that, and then the computer would use the spot that I wanted to and screw me up and everything else. But I mean, this is an amazing game. For it just totally was unexpected. I didn't think it was going to be as much fun as it was, but if you like poker,
The poker plays a really good role in the battles. Though I haven't gotten that far into it, though it seems like there's a lot more to it. I've only played it for maybe an hour or so.
Well, what I thought was really cool is
not even that, actually.
The item system, how your sword, like you're starting to say, your sword does different damage on your different hands, and paging through the available weapons that I can't afford yet, like there are somewhere, if you can pull off a flush, it'll do like, 30 damage or something like that. But if you can only do one pair, it does, like one hit point. Yeah. Whereas you can buy another weapon that'll do like, five or, whatever hit points on a single pair, but it doesn't scale up to the top end as big as the other weapons do. So I thought that was kind of neat, where, you kind of have to like plan your weapon depending on how good of a hand you think you'll be able to play. Because, if you have an awesome sword that does 30 points of damage or, whatever it is on a flush, I mean, that would be huge. But otherwise, you're screwing yourself over if you can't pull it off.
Do you have any idea of the length of the game? Did you make it through a boss battle?
There's bosses on every floor.
But there was like on level five, I think floor five, there was an actual like big boss, which was right before the podcast was about to start. I was playing that floor. So like I said, I wasn't very far into it. Igor, how did you play this a lot?
I only managed to get to the second floor basically, but I share your feelings about the game. Initially, my feeling was, well, I'm not a big cards fan, so this is not going to work for me at all. But it's actually kind of, it does kind of suck you in, just because it's it's an interesting setup of you know, the five poker cards and the whole idea of playing against these monsters. As silly as it is, it actually kind of draws you in, and you wanna beat them to progress to see what's next. So now that, you know, Eli has mentioned all these fun extras, I think I'm going to be playing this some more tonight.
Oh, we should also mention the wild card system. As you, I'm not sure if you get more wild card points or whatever, depending on the type of hand you play. But as you play more, this gauge in the bottom corner of the screen goes up, and then eventually, when it's full, you can tap it to get, you know, turn any of your cards into a wild card. And the whole strategy of like when to use that versus when to save it was kind of driving me crazy. Like, such a good game.
Oh, I just used it right away. I'm not a big poker player. You know?
I always want to save power-ups like that until, you know, like I really need it. And then I end up just like sitting on it so long that I could have used it twice in the meantime.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Now, Blake, I know you probably didn't have as much time with this game. Did you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I can't get into any card games, really. I mean, I every 2 years I learn how to play poker and then I forget. And then I go back. So I really can't have an opinion on it. I mean, even though it has that extra element. So, sorry.
Yeah. No, if you have to relearn poker, it probably is not going to
work. Yeah, and I get it confused with, what's that game, Uno? Like, the cards are different, though. Poker, and I don't know.
All right, it's, we'll leave it at that.
Okay. Wow.
We'll keep going then.
Okay.
Because, So great game so far. As much as I've played it, I am really interested to see how much deeper it gets. It seems like the game must go a fair amount because of all the weapons you can unlock, you know. And I've only bought like one weapon so far, and I've upgraded my hit points a little. This is definitely a one to play. I mean, that said, the floor system is a little rudimentary in terms of, you know, I mean, you're just basically like killing the monsters to clear your path. But it, you know, it's fine. It works. And I actually had to play a couple of the floors a couple of times because I kept dying. You know, I died. I ran out of hit points before I made it to the, you know, the final. And then there's definitely a skill level. You know, I mean, I definitely got better playing it once you sort of can able to pick out the you know, the poker hands in the format that, you know, and sort of the structure they give you.
The one thing that kind of bothered me about the strategy of the game was it seemed like there was a huge advantage to whoever was the person that plays the last two cards on the board. And I don't know if that was like intentional or not, but I found myself like passing just so I could, you know, assure myself that I could be the last move. Because, I mean, as the last person on the board, you can essentially get three hands.
Yeah, you know, no, easily. Totally. You have to pass. Right.
And it doesn't seem like there's any penalty for that. And that was kind of the only thing that seemed kind of weird about the game.
It is a little weird. Right. No, I totally understand what you're saying. I don't know if that comes into play later in that.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I'm about as far in the game as you are.
Yeah. Right now, so. But, you know, I started, if the game lasted that long to where it got to the last four cards on the board, I would pass my turn so I could do the last two. But, you know, and the computer doesn't seem to pass, which is good, I guess. I guess the reason to pass is if you can't make a hand, but you can do it. It doesn't matter. I mean, you know, so.
Well, you might as well pass just to try instead of, like, allowing the computer to, you know, get the three killer.
I agree. But, yeah, I think it'll be interesting if that is a big issue later on.
But, I mean, overall, really, really neat game from, you know, a developer that I'd never heard of before. So,
yeah,
I mean,
no, we'll definitely have to write it up.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was kind of saving this for the podcast because I didn't, you know how it would go over. But after playing it, I kind of want to do it, you know, a full review of that. So I guess keep an eye out for that.
Yep. All right. So let's move on to the last game, which is Cartoon Wars Gunner.
Yeah.
And Eli, you want to talk about that one?
Yeah, this game has had some crazy longevity, both in the top 100 of the games and the actual overall, which, you know, I guess all these Cartoon Wars and kind of stick figure games always do oddly very well. But you play as the hero of Cartoon Wars, I guess. But what I'm not sure of is if the developers are the same, because they're different on the App Store. They're listed under different developers, but this seems like an obvious sequel.
Well, yeah, it was like the first one was labeled Blue, and then the second one is what, Blue GNC? Blue GNC. Like it says the description of it in the App Store calls it, you know, a spin-off of the original, yeah. But I don't know.
I'm not sure how they're
kind
related.
Of a different sort of game, but.
But yeah. Basically, it's kind of like it reminds me of those old school arcade beat 'em ups, like, you know, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade machine, and like the real Simpsons arcade machine. I guess kind of similar to the game that EA released. Only it's set. You can only run so far to the right or to the left, and you play individual levels where, you know, you fight a certain number of bad guys, and initially you start off with your bow, and you can move around and shoot your bow in either direction to kill all these guys. And then at the end of the level, you have the ability to upgrade a ridiculous amount of things. I mean, you have all these different stats you can upgrade and all these tons and tons and tons of items that you can buy, and each of them can be upgraded. I mean, the amount of depth in this game is just stupid. I mean, I don't even know how long it would take you to get, like, the chain gun that you get for, you know, a million coins or whatever it is at the end. But right now I've got I'm getting pretty good at the game between the bow and the gun, which I'm upgrading both of together. And it gets progressively more difficult with new dudes to shoot. And there's also a magic system where you kill guys and they give you MP to spend on spells, which, you know, you can heal yourself briefly and stuff like that. And most of these stick figure games, I kind of play for a while and just kind of get bored of them, because they're usually, you know, like the kind of castle defense flicking games, or Cartoon Wars was kind of like those old castle defense games where you would send, you know, dudes out to fight mm-hmm. the other guys. And I don't know, neither of those really interested me that much. But this one, for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's like the dangling the carrot in front of my face of the ridiculous amount of stuff you can eventually buy if you play it long enough, but I found myself playing this game way longer than I thought I was going to.
How long have you spent with this one?
I'm probably about maybe an hour into it, which is mm-hmm. kind of a long time for an iPhone game. mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What'd you guys think of it? Like,
I don't know. It's a huge length of time, but I didn't play it as long as Eli. I mean, I was going through it, you know, progressing and seeing, you know, what was around the corner. You know, it was interesting action. You've got, you know, with the back and forth firing, and I think you're right about the, you know, it definitely had a feel of, like, you know, I pictured like Golden Axe or something like that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah. And it actually controls a lot better than Golden Axe for the iPhone. but yeah, I mean, you know, it was fun. You know, you had that arcade feel, and you're kind of, it was satisfying to, you know, tear through these people. But I didn't really, in the time I played it, you know, I wasn't, you know, falling in love with it, I guess. It was interesting, kind of quaintly, you know, well done as far as the stick figures, and it was cute, but, you know, it didn't, I didn't fall in love with it. And, you know, maybe if I'd, you know, kept going a little bit further, I would have, I don't know.
Igor?
Sort of mixed. I mean, there were some parts that I liked and some parts that I didn't. My biggest sort of gripe are the controls. And while I love the, how they did the whole arrow and bow shooting, I'm not so crazy about the directional movement. So that, you know, by the time I got used to it, I guess I started having a little more fun with it. But then as much as new things sort of come up in each new level, it does kind of get repetitive at some point. So,
oh, definitely. I mean, this is the kind of game that would appeal to the castle defense crowd that
yeah.
sit there for an hour just flicking dudes.
Yeah. I agree with the more. I didn't actually. So this is actually the second time I played this game. I downloaded it when I think it first started gaining traction, because I wanted to see what the fuss was about. And the first time I played it, I got bored. I got bored before I got entertained, I guess. And I think it does sort of feel of the castle defense, sort of similar, you know, repetitive. The upgrades are sort of, for me, were dangled a little too far out of reach for me to want to put the time into it, you know, where I just did not have the patience to put as much time as I knew it was going to be required to get like the next cool weapon. Similar to the Castle Defense games, you have to, you know, it's an endurance. It's like endurance to earn like the better weapons, not like a skill, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I thought it was kind of cool, the same vibe I got.
But like I said, I didn't get a chance to put that much time into it this time either to know if that was true. But I will say I got bored before I got the better weapons.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a Castle Defense like, you know, kind of curve where you need to get over that initial hump before you start having fun with the game. Because I did the same thing when it came out. You know, I loaded it up, played it for a while with the bow, and was like, well, this is kind of dumb, you know, and just moved on to something else. But as soon as I got involved to the point where I had upgraded my stats to the point where I could like reliably cast spells and, you know, got a gun that was, you know, allowed me to move and shoot at the same time, it got a lot more fun. But
I thought that was just a control issue.
No. As you get different weapons, they have different kind of feels to them. Like the pistol, you can run and shoot at the same time, but it heats up really quick. Oh, which is another element to it. Like aside from the bow, all the weapons heat up as you use them to the point where you have to wait for them to cool down. So you can't just constantly be using one weapon. Which that was kind of interesting because, you know, it forces you to own and upgrade multiple weapons.
Yeah. No, that sounds cool.
But I mean, I don't know if this is really the game for me. I just thought it was well done for what it is, yeah. And you know, but it's one of those games that you really need to sink a lot of time into, I think. And I don't know if this is going to be a game that I sink a lot of time into, but you know, if you're looking for a game, you can probably play for the next month and constantly be, you know, unlocking new, you know, cool crap.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably, you know, one of them.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, I think it's done really well. I think there are people who like these sort of games.
And definitely the screenshots have kind of, you know, made me want to play it a little bit more because, I mean,
is there cool stuff?
Yeah, I mean, you get like this gun that's like blasting this giant blue ray and you get like this mech suit that you wear. And
That is cool. And, you know, the other thing that sort of burned me on the Castle Defense games is that the upgrades were never actually that cool.
Right. Well, that's what kind of got me going with this game.
You put your time in and you get like, I don't know, like there's some like crazy sounding weapon and it's just like
it's like an additional archer that
it looks exactly the same, right? Yeah. There's no difference. Or like there's one version of it where like you get some archer, yeah, there's no animation like associated with it, but no, you're right, looking at the screenshots the weapon upgrades actually look like there's some actual satisfaction to using them rather than like in name alone.
I just wish there was kind of like an easy mode or something because like I just want to, you know, quickly progress through the game and have fun. I don't, you know, want to turn this into like a 40-hour thing so I can finally get, you know, the chain gun from the iTunes description and be like, oh, this is cool, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's the thing with me as well. It sort of seems like, you know, it's a quick pick up and play game, but it requires you to put in so much time into it to actually get some of the cool weapons. And by the time, you know, you get there, you kind of stop being interested because it gets really repetitive with sort of the enemies. And, you know, once you figure out the system, how to kill them all, it's all the same. You're just getting extra gold points, you know?
Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, I don't know. There's people out there that really love these kind of, you know, slow progressing, you know, shooting and defending things games. So, I mean, I don't know. It's doing amazing. So.
Yeah.
Really, my only other complaint with the game is the controls don't like follow your thumb, and I don't know if I'm just so used to how the Game Loft D-pads work, which, you know, are actually pretty stellar, where, you know, like if you slide your thumb off the side of what the D-pad, you know, area is on the screen, it'll keep moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. But it seems like in this game, you know, you slide your thumb too far off the D-pad area and you do just like stops.
Mm-hmm. It resets. Yeah, I think I don't think I knew what was happening. I didn't really register what was wrong, but in playing it, I think I came up against that and it felt a little bit awkward.
Yeah. Like I think what would be awesome with this game is if, you know, the screen was split down the middle, I guess, and like moving your left thumb anywhere on that side of the screen controlled your movement, and then moving your right thumb, you know, right or left on the other side controlled which way you shoot. Mm-hmm. That would be, you know, awesome.
Moving on. Those are all the games that we had scheduled to talk about. And so the remaining time we're going to talk about, or I was going to talk about CES 2010, which I attended. And it wasn't, and I didn't attend it primarily for an iPhone gaming perspective. And so there were a couple of interesting things to come out of it, though it certainly wasn't a big, you know, it wasn't a big venue for launching anything. I know some developers were out there, and there was some iPhone. There was some. There were a fair amount, of, I think, iPhone game developers, because there were some development conferences from Verizon and whatnot. So anyone who did mobile games, on platforms other than the iPhone, actually were probably in attendance.
Let me ask you this briefly, sure. Arnold. You and I have been to a few Mac worlds, and I know that you know Apple Mac world. It's not the same as iPhone specific iPhone gaming, but you know people were wondering if CES would be a you know a kind of a dump over or you know a replacement for Mac world as far as just the general Apple. Presence, you know, of Apple-related items. What's your feel on that?
Yeah, I mean, and that's sort of the reason I went.
Yeah, because not to veer too far off, but it is. Might be interested.
So, first of all, CES is like enormous. It's insane. I had not been to CES before, but you know, in terms of floor space for vendors, it's. I don't know what the multiple is bigger than Macworld ever was, but it's like. Many, many times bigger. Like, I got tired walking through one of the three floors that were out there. So, and versus like Macworld, you could walk the whole floor like in half, in half a day and be okay. there were iPhone, iPod accessories present, and that had a similar feel to what Macworld had. There's very little Mac specific stuff. And certainly no Apple presence, which was probably, you know, the bulk of the appeal of Macworld, I think.
You say there was very little Mac-specific stuff?
Very little Mac-specific stuff. Mostly iPhone, iPod stuff.
Oh, okay.
And most of that was uninteresting as well, because it was, you know, all, you know, how many cases do you really want to see?
Did you get to try the TV hat?
No, actually, I didn't. I'm trying
to explain what that is. It's this hat that like has this really long bill on the front that you like put your iPhone in, and then has these flaps that make it look like one of those old virtual reality headsets. I guess
it's so you didn't have to hold your iPhone to watch a movie.
Nice.
But I actually tried a different version of that last year at Macworld, but I didn't actually try the one at CES. Saying all that, there was one really cool announcement at CES, and that was the quadricopter, the AR drone by Parrot. And you guys, did you guys all see, Igor, did you see a video of that?
Yeah, I actually did. That seemed really interesting.
Yeah, and it's sort of peripherally iPhone related, though. I mean, I guess it actually is substantially iPhone related because they released a development kit for it, for this thing. So it's a four blade quadricopter, which is really impressive to see. It's like a little remote control helicopter, but there's a lot going on. And I was never an RC helicopter guy. Blake, did you ever?
I did model rocketry, RC airplanes, never helicopters. But you know having done that, what I see here in the videos we've got of it that you brought back. It's kind of, it's almost like some kind of unreal fantasy device.
Yeah, it looks crazy.
Eli, did you do RC anything?
I did the model rocketry and RC cars, and I had like a cheap little RC helicopter.
I was just like out of touch or like, but it looked awesome. It looked amazing. But no, I mean, talking to like, there's one guy, this guy, I know Kyle, who works, iFixit. He apparently does, the RC helicopter 7. He was like blown away by it. Saying that like, I guess the technology that's involved or the processing involved requiring just to have that thing be able to hold like stationary in midair is apparently like just impressive because it's got a camera.
I, when I first posted that the videos initially, I was like, this looks insane, but it's not going to work anything like this when you actually try it out. And then you posted yours, and I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. So there's a camera pointing down, looking at the ground, and they use image. They do image recognition on that to try to keep it stationary so it doesn't drift. And then there's, I think there's some basic, you know, wind compensation too because of that too. I guess so. If you start like pushing it in one direction, it'll
can tell that
try
it's
to hold,
that way,
hold,
right.
hold its vertical, you know, hold its position, which right. is, you know, I don't know. It just looks unreal when you see it doing right. that. And then it's got, you know, a gyroscope, accelerometer. It's got a forward facing camera as well, and it can actually, it does image recognition on the forward camera too. In that you can it can track. This special, like, you know, cone that they use, you know, so you can have it just follow that or something. Mm-hmm. And then apparently there's some military implications with this too, because apparently there's some military people out there like looking at it. I don't know if this the project may just disappear in the next few months. We'll never hear of it again.
Probably.
I mean, that's sort of the implication that people were talking about, like, based on all that. And I mean, which is surprising to me, because you think someone could have done that before now, but it was really impressive.
Is it now? I know, you know, looking, and you know, everybody should you know, look at the great video that you got, because, you know, it demonstrates it very clearly. You're looking out of the camera on the iPhone. You're seeing out of the front camera. Can you look out of the bottom camera on the iPhone?
Apparently, you can look out of the bottom camera, but we didn't get to that. But yeah, so the actual device is controlled by your iPhone, and the controls actually work really well. Left, right, turning, so you can. You know, swivel 360 degrees left and right, and then vertical height, and then the actual control itself. You press a special button on the iPhone screen, and then the tilt of the phone itself controls, you know, as you would expect, the movement and direction of the device itself. And it was really easy to pick up. Actually, like the thing that was most confusing is that turning left is, you know. Turning, you know, you kind of naturally expect it to be left of you, but it's actually left of, you know, it, you know, its front-facing camera. So, I mean, right. if you look at the screen itself, because it's showing the live video, that's the view you're turning left, which makes sense, but it's right. not what you do naturally when you first pick it up. But
I think if you've done any sort of, you know, model, you kind of get pick up, you kind of get a feel for that. Yeah. Well, did you know? I know that obviously the iPhone is communicating with it. Anyway, it's Wi-Fi, right?
It's Wi-Fi.
Now, is what is doing the calculations, the stability calculations? It has some kind of an onboard computer, I assume.
It's all onboard. I don't know what kind of processor's in there.
It's not like the iPhone is driving that.
No. If you lose connectivity.
It just stands. What does it
do? No, it'll hover. It'll just hover for like a minute, and then if you don't connect back up, it'll land by itself.
That would be kind of horrifying. Like if a storm caught it and blew it into like the neighboring, you know, neighborhood, and some guy just sees this thing hovering there.
I know.
Sort of horrifying.
Well, so tracking it. Yeah, and getting even beyond that. So just, you know, obviously just flying it around is kind of cool. Though the battery life is pretty limited. In the development sure. model, it's 15 minutes. But
essentially, that's pretty standard for most.
Yeah,
RCs.
That doesn't seem that bad.
Right. It's you can swap it out, so it's not like so you can have spare batteries and just keep going. But so they also released a development kit surrounding this, where you can where they expect third party developers to make games using it, and you can, you know, imagine. Having two of these and like shooting at each other in you know in real space, but virtually on the, you know, on the controls, and then I don't know, like I imagine like you could even have like a virtual maze, you know, where you're flying around this maze. I don't know. There's a lot of possibilities, and they're, you know, they made some demo ones which I actually didn't get a chance to try, but they showed in their little promo video. But they said, you know, well, we're not game developers. We're going to, you know, hopefully let the third-party developers pick up and make games for it. So,
I mean, it looks really, really amazing. Is it? I saw some speculation as to the price. Was there?
No, they didn't say. A lot of people, like some other like websites, have speculated like 500.
Someone was saying like 500. I mean,
I don't know where they got that from, because the developers never said. I mean, you know, the company never said.
Yeah. Well, it seems. I mean. Yeah, depending on the price, I mean, I would have to, you know, get one if it's, you know, not incredibly steep.
Would you get it for 500?
I'd be tempted, but
yeah, I would be tempted too. I'd be really tempted.
If it was like if it was $299 or something, I would definitely get it. But I don't know. I think of all the 20-year-old Amigas I could buy for $500.
Igor, are you tempted by this?
I am, and I would be even more tempted by a sort of a full-size version of it.
Like one you could actually sit in and get into.
One you could actually sit in and get into, yeah.
One you could pick up people and take them away.
There you go.
I think that would cost more than $500.
But, but still controlled by the iPhone, you know?
Yeah, clearly.
So what was the lag like on the video when you were screwing around with it? Was it pretty real time?
The video on the screen?
Yeah.
It was okay. I mean, you can see in the video I shot that it's not like, you know.
Yeah, but you can't see exactly what the screen and what the unit is doing, I don't think, in the same shot. You know what I'm saying? I think Eli has. Right.
It seemed fine, I guess. I mean, it wasn't like 60 frames a second. If you know, you could tell like when it was rotating around, it would like sort of, you know, it was like a bit more of a jerky animation, but it kept up. It seemed, you know, from what I could tell.
Think how many of these will appear in like, you know, college dorm settings.
Yeah.
You know, eavesdropping. Yeah.
Did they say anything about recording the video that it captures, or is it?
I mean, they didn't say. I didn't ask, but it didn't. You know, I mean, I guess I don't know what's possible with the SDK or with that development kit. You know, maybe you can. I don't know how much.
Because that would be really interesting.
Flexibility. I imagine there's a lot of flexibility, but yeah, that's true. It's Wi-Fi limited, which, in terms of, you know, directional, so it's not crazy far. Because Wi-Fi, I generally think of like a house, right? Like a house, like.
If you're in a field or something, it might be more with no obstacles.
Yeah, if you're outside, it gets more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting, and you know the potential games will be interesting. I don't know. I mean, I'm tempted to get it just because it's cool, but I mean practically, I think it would. I wish there was. If I live near either, you know, Blake, Eli, you know, either of you two. And you all were going to get one, then I would certainly get one. Like, you know, definitely I would get one. If I knew someone who was getting one that would, like, you know, we could, like, play, you know, against each other or whatever. But, you know, on its own, you know, I don't know if I'm as, you know, since I was never a big RC guy, though, maybe Touch Arcade will buy it for us.
You don't have any good neighbors to spy on with your remote control drones?
Yeah, you'd be that crazy. That'll be your hook, the crazy remote control maniac guy.
That's true.
Just have it just walk the neighborhood with it like 2-3 feet behind you.
Yeah.
Just there he goes again.
Yeah.
Right.
Very cool. I mean, it'd be cool. They need to have like a laser on it or something, you know, like a laser pointer or something, or have it shoot plastic beads or something. But, yeah. But it looks awesome. I mean, the video is crazy, the one you brought back. I mean, yeah. I hope everybody takes a look at that. We'll link that out again in the show notes post.
I just hope it's affordable, because if it's affordable, I think the third party support is just going to explode on that. Because I mean, how cool is that thing? You know.
Yeah.
As long as it's $1.99 or less,
I will purchase it.
Yeah. Some of the pricing talk.
$250 then.
It's frustrating. The iPhone low iPhone price game pricing.
Right.
Extends in the hardware talk now.
There are some people that expect it to be less than $50.
Right. It should have been free.
Yeah.
the light version? What the?
Yeah. It works for like 15 seconds.
And that was true also for. So the only other thing that we reported on Touch Arcade from CES was another one of these, you know, control grips for accelerometer steering, which arguably is questionable. Long-term value, you know, like, do you really want to buy an accessory to play an iPhone game? I mean, it sort of defeats some of the convenience of having an iPhone game, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That thing didn't look particularly cool either. You know?
Though, actually, this was so. I thought the coolest part of this one was that. So, this is a PosiMotion's Helix gaming grip. Mm-hmm. Is that it could do a portrait control for like presumably like Doodle Jump, right? Now, I don't know if your accuracy on Doodle Jump is actually improved by holding two hands on the outside of a sort of a steering wheel type thing, but you know, they claim.
I would guess it would not be.
I don't think so. No, it would be interesting to try, but it does kind of beat the purpose of just having the phone in your pocket all the time. Or,
you know, No, I mean, in terms of portability and like convenience, you sort of lose all that. And I agree. I think Doodle Jump, despite the fact that it supports portrait accelerometer, you know, controls, mm-hmm. I actually don't think it would benefit. Though arguably it might benefit, like, you know, the landscape, like racing games or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if you with Doodle Jump, you're using like your wrist versus you instead of two wrists plus some elbow, you know, you're reducing. You know, it's like it's kind of crazy. It's like, it's why people can, you know, draw better with styluses as opposed to a mouse, because you're using your fingers instead of your whatever that is. What is that? Your, not your ankle, your wrist. That's right.
Wow.
But I thought that, but like looking at that thing, it did seem like if you were just a hardcore racing fan, it might actually add a little something to, you know, some of the racing games.
Yeah, I could see it maybe.
You know, because it feels more like a wheel, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever. Like I said, this is not a new idea. There's been a bunch of these described or photographed or announced.
Well, did either of you guys play Mario Kart for the Wii with the little wheel attachment thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it came with the game for free, so I mean, I guess it was cool, but it wasn't like, you know, snapping it in the wheel was like, oh my God, I'm really racing now. This is amazing, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what this reminds me of also. And I don't know if you guys have seen, but they also have the extensions for the Wiimote for to make it look like a tennis racket or a golf.
Yeah.
I've got
the rifle. I've got it came with that crossbow game. You know, the Wii, you stick the Wii remote and the nunchuck into this thing. It looks like some kind of a futuristic machine gun or something. And, you know, there are a lot of those things out there.
It's actually, I think those extensions for a golf club or a tennis racket actually make more sense because they give you some reference.
Well, it makes it feel a bit different. I mean, a different, like, weight in your hand, I guess.
Different weight, but also, like, I think, you know, the Wiimote's a little, you know, I mean, I guess you learn pretty quickly what's the right direction to face, but I think it gives you extra points of reference, like, especially, like, the golf club, you know, you're not going to hit the golf. I think sometimes the directional stuff is a little, can get a little confusing, which direction you're supposed to be aiming at.
Well, actually, if the developer, I mean, if a game for the Wii, say, came with something like the golf club and that's what you were supposed to use, I would think that would actually let the developers, you know, anticipate more accurately what's going to be happening, and so that they could actually code it a little bit tighter. But, you know, right, not so much with this. So no eye control folks out there, huh?
Oh, you the act more of an active
control. No, I was saying you didn't bump into any of the eye control folks out there in CES, I suppose. No.
So, and here's the thing, as I've heard, and I don't know, Igor, if you've heard anything related to this. I've actually heard, so this is just a passive piece of plastic that you stick your iPhone in and turn. So, you know, people have been sort of waiting or talking or, you know, the eye control pad, which, you know, is like a virtual game pad that plugs into the iPhone, right, through the dock connector.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard a rumor that Apple has not approved any of those controllers. That there's been, you know, I didn't talk to the eye control pad folk directly, but I heard that basically Apple's the one that's blocking it. There is no active control pad out there now, right? There are a couple that were like sort of announced when the SDK opened up for 3.0, but you know, we haven't heard anything since, which is a little suspicious.
It is.
I think there was like one working proof of concept for like Jailbreak Doom, but that was
it. Jailbreak is Jailbreak, you know. But I'm saying Apple supported because with the 3.0 SDK, they said you can have these official accessories that go through the dock and actually interface with the SDK. But from my understanding, Apple seems to be blocking it. So
my understanding is that actually what they are allowing is the accessory to actually interact with a specific app. So it's almost like you would need to have a different pad for each different
game. You think it's just the approval is just for a single
app? Well, I mean, I read something on a keypad that a company was trying to develop for the iPhone. And the problem with it is you can only use it with that company's application. Like, you can't plug in the keyboard into the iPhone and then type your email.
Well, sure.
Safari, right?
Sure.
So instead of the same.
Well, I mean, I don't think. I think it's a little different, though, because I don't. I expect that the game developers will have to specifically support it.
Right.
Versus a keyboard, which would only be really useful if it transparently supported it, including Apple's apps.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, maybe there's some weirdness with that, in that maybe they're only approved in pairs, you know, app and accessory.
Right. I think that's probably where, yeah, you know, the problem lies, but who knows?
Yeah. Anyway, so otherwise, I guess CES was not too exciting from an iPhone gaming perspective.
Did you get any hands-on time with the Nexus One while you were there?
I did play with the Nexus One a little.
How was the animated wallpaper? Did it blow your mind?
I didn't see the animated wallpaper. I had a hard time with it because I'm not that familiar with Android, and so it all felt very foreign to me. Mm. The weird whatever. I played with
hardware cool at least.
Yeah, the hardware was nice. I mean, it seemed like a nice looking phone. The web browser was, you know, like I said, it was just sort of a little foreign to me. Didn't really jump out at me as like amazing offhand, but again, a lot of it was just my unfamiliarity with the Android operating system. I did play with a few tablets, and they were not that exciting actually, because they were most of them were on Android, and Android, it seemed like they just put it on Android, but I don't think Android's really been optimized for tablet form factor yet, so it was a little awkward to use on a tablet.
Hmm.
The keyboard was weird because it was just a soft keyboard, but there's no real comfortable way to type on it. Well, that wraps it up for podcast number 10. Igor, you want to close it out and tell us a recap about yourself and your company and your website?
Well, sure. I mean, Lima Sky, we're the makers of Doodle Jump, which is immensely popular right now on the App Store. And we got some new cool updates in the store for the future, so look out for them.
Great.
Cool.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I guess that wraps up another episode of the Touch Arcade podcast. So, as always, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to email us, post on the forums, or post on the front page. So, thanks for listening. Have a great day, and buy a Doodle Jump right now.
Yes.
Indeed.
Indeed.
I can't imagine anyone listening does not own Doodle Jump.